Once there was a chief priest named Tupaya who sailed away with Captain Cook, never to return home. Tupaya was of aristocratic rank on his native home of Raiatea, but circumstances would land him in Tahiti, where he met the English explorer Captain James Cook. And there hangs a tale. Historian Hank Dreesen worked for many years for Archives New Zealand, and he's written about the trials and tribulations of the Polynesian priest Tupaya. We'll hear from him in a moment, but if you can't quite locate Tahiti, it's time to get out your atlas and look at the southwest of the Pacific in what's known as French Polynesia. There you'll see two groups of islands, which today are called the Society Islands.
Captain Wallace discovered the island the year before Cook, and Bougainville arrived there a year later. And then when Cook refound the islands, that's when the whole thing kicked off. Cook came there in 1769, and 1760, 1772, and 1774.
So he went there a few times.
Cook went there three times altogether, yes. But when Cook discovered them, he named Tahiti and the nearby island of Moorea the King George's Islands. And to the west, he discovered the Society Islands, which is a different group comprising Raiatea, Huaheine, Taha, Bora Bora, Maupiti. He named those the Society Islands, and Tahiti and Moorea the King George Islands.
Well, when James Cook arrived in Tahiti, he became acquainted with the chief priest, Tupaya. Mm. Was Tupaya friendly to Cook?
I think he turned out to be very friendly indeed. He did his utmost to become friendly with the Europeans because they had all sorts of goodies that he liked. Banks certainly was very impressed with him. But little did they know that those smiling, heavy-faced islanders were actually part of a very warlike society.
Yes, in fact, Tupaya had some scars on his body, which I think Joseph Banks remarked on.
That's right.
How did he look to James Cook? What would James Cook have laid his eyes on when he first saw Tupaya?
He was very impressed with the deference paid to Tupaya by his followers. The man had a big scar on his chest where a spear of a stingray had penetrated his body. He appeared to be very friendly with the reigning chiefess of Tahiti at the time.
What was Tupaya's history? How had he come to Tahiti?
Well, that's an interesting story all by itself. It started about 1760 when a big war took place on Tahiti between Papara and a nearby district. And Papara was totally defeated. And a big fleet of canoes set off with survivors of the battle. And among them was Te'eva, a chiefess. They sailed away and got to Raiatea, where they settled down, and Te'eva married Maua, a sacred chief of Tapu Tapu Atea, which is a big marae near Opoa. She had a son by him called Maua. So far, so good. But then suddenly a big war broke out between Raiatea and Bora Bora, another island nearby. And the Bourbons invaded Raiatea. Took a number of years, 3 or 4 years. And they defeated Raiatea completely, as well as a nearby island of Huaheine. Bora Bora was very famous for its warlike qualities, and its warriors were greatly feared in all the surrounding islands. Then they fled back. They came back to Tahiti.
So that's how Tupaya came to Tahiti?
And that's Tupaya came, because Tupaya was among those defeated on Raiatea. That's probably where he got wounded. And they got back to Tahiti. They brought the war god Oro with them and certain sacred regalia, like the sacred red feather girdle, and went back to Papara, where Oro was quietly installed.
And Papara is where? Is that in Tahiti?
Sorry, that's in Tahiti, yes. That's a big district west of Papeete.
Well, that history of warfare amongst the islands is pretty complex. I imagine the Europeans wouldn't have really understood what was going on. But was it driven by religious rivalries?
It was partly religious rivalry, but partly status rivalry. First of all, you were born a chief, but you had to make it on your own all the same. There was constant warfare between the chiefs, as to who was the highest ranking. And because the sacred red feather girl got introduced into Tahiti, that gave the papyri chiefs, well, they thought a higher ranking, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Tell me about the sacred regalia, this red feather girdle. What did
That's
it look
right.
like? I mean, are there any descriptions?
Well, we have a description of it a few years later, when it was seen by Captain Bligh. It was quite long, made out of featherwork, red feathers, yellow feathers, and black feathers, and incorporated into it at that time in Bligh's sword was a British ensign, a flag, that Wallace had left behind.
How interesting. Now, you mentioned earlier that Tupaia brought his god, Oro, with him. And
That's
now,
right.
now, was that an idol? Was it a kind of a sculpture?
Not in that sense, not in the conventional sense. There's one or two specimens of that god in Leiden in Holland. It's difficult to describe. It's not at all like what you would expect. It's like a big fishing cage covered in feathers and tapa.
How important was it for Tupaia to bring that god?
Well, Tupaia really had no choice. He was defeated and he had nowhere else to go. So they came to Tahiti and brought the god with him because the Boer warriors were all over the place. So they installed the god in the marae in Papara.
Now, that marae that you refer to, was that a structure?
Well, first of all, there's, even today, there are hundreds and hundreds of ruins of marae all over the place, on Tahiti and all the other islands. It's basically a place of worship. It's an open-air structure built of stone and coral slabs, coral rock. I've seen some examples on Raya Teyantaha where the slabs were really massive, but 8 or 9 feet tall. They're built like a platform, and sometimes two or three platforms on top of each other. In front of the platform is papai. It's a pavement, and on the pavement are stone uprights, which are kneeling stones or praying stones or leaning stones, in which the priest or the head of the families worshipped their god. The gods themselves were displayed on the platform, together with all sorts of other things.
And was a sacrifice practiced there?
Gosh, yeah. Really horrendous stories. The most famous one is Tapu Tapu Teia Marae, which is where Oro came from. We got stories about people bringing in human sacrifices from all the islands in the neighborhood. Hundreds and hundreds of bodies. When I was there, there was still plenty of skulls laying around.
Would they have been the bodies of enemies?
That's right, basically enemies, but sometimes also just plain sacrifices.
I gather the presence of the marae, which Tupaia built, and it was big.
It's huge. Massive.
I understand it didn't go down well with all of the natives.
No, the Tahitians resisted the introduction of Oro quite strongly, but in the end they had, well, different districts followed different ways. A war broke out just after the marae was completed in 1768. Banks describes the scene quite well. When he came there, he saw this pile of rubble, 15 platforms on top of each other. And on the beaches and along the shores were thousands and thousands of bodies rotting away in the sun. Quite a famous battle was known as the Battle of the Protruding Cuttlefish, because the cuttlefish used to settle in the skulls, and their feet, their tentacles, used to come out of the eye sockets.
Ooh, grisly sight.
Grisly stuff, right? That is the other side to the Tahitian personality. They were a deeply religious people, but also extremely warlike. They had many gods, like Tangaroa, Ta'aroa, the creator god, Tane, the god of all beautiful things and handicrafts, Ro'o, the god of an agricultural god, or Tinirau, the god of the ocean, Ra'a, the god of sacredness in Bora Bora, Tane in Huahine.
What about Oro? What was he the god of?
Can't you guess? He's the god of war.
War.
Yeah. He was the god of war. He replaced a previous god called Tu, and that was it.
Well, on July 13th, 1769, Cook left Tahiti and took Tupaia with him.
That's right.
Was Tupaia a voluntary passenger on that voyage?
Yes, he was. He wanted to go right. He wanted to go with Cook right from the beginning. Cook was a bit reluctant to take him at first because that means he had to have another crew member. He wasn't prepared to do that, so Banks took him more as a servant under Banks' personal care.
Wouldn't he have been helpful in terms of knowing the area around, the islands and so forth? I thought he was a navigator.
Well, he was a navigator as well. He has many sides to Tupaia. He was an excellent navigator. He directed the ships to the Leeward Islands, to Raiatea and Bora Bora, Maupiti and so forth, whereby Cook became the discoverer of those islands. He got there by the guidance of Tupaia.
And they are the Society Islands.
They're the Society Islands, yes, yes.
Now, you suggest in your study that Tupaia might have been hoping that the Bora Bora tribes would attack the foreigners as they did earlier.
Yes, he directed the endeavor to the very spot where all his lands lay and his morai lay. That's quite curious because he was very much afraid of the Bora Borans. And they had conquered that whole side of the island. One suspects that he was hoping that the Bora Borans would attack the ship, with the same result as Wallace was attacked on Tahiti a few years before. But it didn't happen.
And what was the result?
The cannons blasted away a few canoes, and that was it.
Right. So he had hoped that maybe the foreigners would get rid of his old enemies.
That's right. Exactly right. Yes, yes. This is what I'm suggesting. Looks very much like it.
Well, when did Tupaia's luck start to give out on that voyage?
Well, it lasted a fair while. When they got to New Zealand, he was very valuable to Cook as an interpreter. The language is very similar to Maori. And it was very helpful. It also made quite an impression on the Maori people themselves, who even today remember Tupaia as a priest who came on a foreign ship. But once they left Polynesia, when they got to Australia, Tupaia wasn't really much use. In fact, one suspects that he was more of a nuisance than anything else. And when they got to Batavia in Indonesia, which was then Dutch, Tupaia and a whole lot of other people succumbed to a disease and died. That was the end of Tupaia.
So in the end, do you think James Cook was appreciative of Tupaia's presence, even though he thought he was a bit of an argumentative fellow on board?
I think all in all he did, yes. He had nothing else apart from that one comment. He was quite complimentary about Tupaia, and Banks certainly was very much impressed with him. Tupaia gave him all sorts of useful information, like the names of the islands that they passed, or the navigation system. He gave him information on the gods, on the star system that they had, on the winds, on botany, within Polynesia, that is.
And how is Tupaia remembered by his own people?
Not at all.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Was that because he sailed away and sort of left them?
I suspect also he had no descendants.
And that really was the key to Polynesian society.
It isn't very much so, yes, yes. They worshipped the ancestors, ancestor gods. That's one way of remembering your ancestor, your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents.
So Tupaia had no one to remember him?
That's right. He had a mother that they encountered on Tahiti on Cook's third voyage, I think, who asked after him and berated Cook for not cutting the hair of Tupaia's head as a keepsake.
Hank Dreesen's story about Tupaia is published in a collection of studies called Vision and Reality in Pacific Religion. Hank was speaking to me from Melbourne. That's The Ark with me, Rachel Conn.